Welcome to Situational Awareness Tactics Podcast. This podcast provides the crucial art of understanding current elements in an environment to increase your safety and survival. Here's your host, forensic psychologist and consultant, Dr. Carlos.
Welcome back, everyone. We have a great guest today, Robin Hunting. You can find him on Instagram at Dutch in the USA. It's Dutch in the USA, D-U-T-C-H in the USA. You can also find him on YouTube and TikTok. Got a huge following on your TikTok. And if you go check out any of his social media pages, you'll know why. He's got some great stuff on situational awareness. That's what we're going to be talking about today. But the neat thing about Robin is he also shows you the stuff that's out there that's not working, stuff that could be a fraud, stuff that could be scams. So that can get you into more trouble, because if you're trying to count on something to save your life and it doesn't, that's even more problematic. So we'll get into that conversation in a minute. Make sure to share, subscribe, hit that like button. You know, we like it. Let's not waste any more time. Welcome to the show, Robin Hunting. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. You know, I want to give you a couple of, as much time as you want, but to describe a little bit of your background and what gave you a lot of this knowledge and situational awareness, because people always want to know, what does he know? You know, what kind of background does he have?
Yeah, so I started off in a sort of an ROTC program in the Dutch military, where you learn a trade and then they provide like military affiliation to that. That was in the Royal Army. I finished that course. It's about 18, 19 months. And then from there, my CO, the person giving the training, was a Royal Dutch Marine. He said, it seems like you have a little bit more energy. You want to do more. You don't like to sit around. Would you like to do something else? I'm like, well, I would love to see what's out there. And that's how I ended up joining the Royal Dutch Marines, which is, in my country's name is Corps Mariniers. And from there, met the love of my life, who was traveling through Europe, and we moved to the U.S. after that, hence the name Dutch in the USA.
How long were you a Royal Marine? Quite a while.
I did 2 years Army and then 5 years of the Royal Marines.
Okay. And that's the interesting thing. We talked a little bit before the show, is a certain skill set that you learned from there that's helped you a lot in this world. Let's see. Let's see how we start off. What is the number one thing so far that you remember from your days as a Royal Marine that really stood out for you when you came back to civilian life that you said, wow, that really helps a lot in the civilian life? In regards to situational awareness, I guess.
As far as like on a personal note or something that can be used for everyone? Because there's multiple aspects.
That's a good question. How about both of those?
Okay. So as far as like something that personally stuck out for me and that it really helped me be more successful is, no matter how bad your day is in the military, you get prepared for all kinds of situations, and everyone going through boot camp has that one day that they think of, and it's like that was your worst day. Nothing worked, nothing went right, and that's really where I look back and go like, hey, I'm having a really bad day, but thankfully it's not as bad as that one day. So I guess the mindset really, really helps. Like, I can get through this, wherever that's personal, mentally, any kind of stress-related issues, that really helps. And then your overall situational awareness. I guess being in the military gives you a perspective of being open-minded. Like, hey, we live in a great world, but it's not always that great. So you can still have a great vision of the world and enjoy yourself and be aware of where you are. You talk about it a lot in situational awareness, like what color codes are we? Are we green, red, orange, whatever? And being outside usually means that you're somewhere in that orange range, right? You're outside. You don't really know what to expect. Things change easily. So if you're on that baseline, why not look over your shoulder once in a while? Just to, you know, make sure everything is all right. And that really incorporates and seems to be resonating with a lot of my audience. Just these basic tips, you know. Check your vehicle before you get in. Like, these small little things that people are like, well, if I'm not in a bad area, why would I think of that? And I'm like, well, you have the reports on news and people in your car and all kinds of stuff. Why not do that one simple thing?
Maybe answer me this question. I know we're going to get into something else in a minute, but am I wrong here? But even if you're taking a trip to a city you don't know, you should maybe take a look quickly at the crime rate, maybe know the bad spots if it's a city you don't know, even if it's just visiting for a couple of hours, maybe it's an hour and a half away, but you haven't been there before. You have no idea about the city. Is it important to kind of do a prep check before you go?
Oh, absolutely. So if you travel, there's a whole bunch of things that you can do. And it starts with basic stuff like taking copies of your IDs or important documents, you know, wherever you have that backed up on your drives or whatever. But small stuff like that is a crazy hassle if you lose that. So if you ever do get robbed in these cities and you don't have your copy of your ID, try to get back to America. It's almost impossible. You have to find an embassy. On top of that, you need the address to the embassy. So all these small little things that you can, you know, do prior to traveling. What is the culture there? What is the religion? Am I going to get looked on if I don't wear a habib? Or, you know, there's all kinds of things that you should consider when traveling, including crime rate. For those who don't know, Barcelona is the number one pickpocketing spot in the world. So how do you counter that? Do you put money in your shoes? Do you wear a small man purse over your chest with a jacket over it so they can't easily get in there? I traveled to Spain quite a bit. The markets there are amazing, but we've also had my mom's purse cut open from underneath. They walk by you.
Oh, wow.
They cut the underside open. Everything drops out and they disappear into the crowd. Things like that. It's just important to know what crime is active there and how seriously do you need to take it. There's some that have lower threat levels than some of these other countries.
What about domestically? I guess what I was thinking about. In other words, sometimes people get a little too comfortable. So have you ever been to California? I don't know if you've ever been out here.
I have.
You know where Orange County is to LA? Yeah. So Orange County, I think, is about an hour away from LA, depending on where you're coming from, obviously, and where you're going. But let's say it's an hour and 20 minutes. But I know people sometimes that have traveled down here. When I used to live down there, they travel down there and it's an hour and 20 minute drive to go over to some place they've never been to, some city. They don't know anything about it. And I'm looking at that. Well, you should probably look a little bit and see if there's a crime rate in that area, if there's a protest in that area, what's going on. So I think sometimes people get a little complacent because it's, well, you know, it's the same, just county to county. It's California. But should you also be looking to see what's going on in that case?
A little bit. I mean, you have a little day trip, that's fine. But if you live just outside bigger cities and you go towards inner cities, the danger goes up dramatically. For me, that's close to my home is Miami. The crime rate in there is much higher than it is where I live. So it's not a bad idea to kind of check out, especially if you're going to have your car parked there for longer periods of time. Do you want to park indoor, outdoor? What are your risk factors? And it doesn't need to be a 3-hour search on, you know, what can I do more? Just a quick breeze of the city and, you know, what is the crime rate? What should I be looking for? Am I leaving my bag in the car or should I take it or put it in the trunk? Like, you might not think of those things when you just do a quick little stop at a grocery store, leave your little your bag in the car with your laptop. But if you, you know, be there longer, then you might want to take it out or hide it better.
I guess two things made me think about, because I know I talked to my friend earlier before we had the interview and he was thinking about going to San Francisco. And I said, well, where are you going in San Francisco? And he said, Fisherman's Wharf. I said, well, literally this morning I was reading that car robberies have gone up by 300% in San Francisco and the Fisherman's Wharf. I said, you better be careful, know where you're going on that area, because it seems to be going up a lot. And that's just car robberies. Every other crime has been going up too. So he's like, oh, I didn't even know. And I'm not criticizing him in any way. I'm just saying it seems like so simple, right? You just go from one city to another city and you don't think about it. But the other thing it made me think about too is gas, because we've seen a lot of videos of people getting hit at gas stations. But if you're going on an hour and a half trip and you just have enough gas barely to get there.
Yeah.
We know those people.
I find it interesting with gas stations about the robberies, because They have increased their security by a lot, right? And most people that they use cards, leave their wallets, they just take their card, do the card in, leave everything in the car. To have that kind of confidence to rob someone at a store where you know there's 10, 20 cameras. Even if you try to do a carjacking, they know exactly where you're coming from. Most gas stations are near, you know, we have a federal highway. I don't know what you guys have there, but somewhere close to like the highways or bigger streets that cops are on left and right. So I don't know if people are getting more daring or if the pandemic has brought, you know, the disparity for the need of money or something like that, that it raised. But I feel that a lot of people are getting a lot more cocky with crimes.
No, that's a great point. If you look at the San Francisco NYPD tips, if you follow those folks on Twitter, I've seen the exact same thing, especially an uptick in daytime crimes. Or just in the middle of the day, they'll assault somebody and steal from them. It's remarkable. It's
Everything feels far away, right? So everything is, oh, that doesn't happen to me. That's I've heard that in another city. But people don't know they're involved in this day to day. You go to a 7-Eleven or whatever store, there's a bar there that measures your height. People are starting to forget why we have those things. You know, because obviously technology, you know, you have a good indication, but it's to indicate what the height is of the robber. So you are involved in this day-to-day safety awareness, if you want it or not. But some people seem to be forgetting that, you know, doing a little debrief of your life or like a quick check of your own personal safety, that's not for them. It happens to other people.
That's true. That's a big boo-boo. Let me ask you this, Robin. So what got you on this kick now? Because you're doing a lot of good work on your social media. Again, it's Dutch in the USA, folks, on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, running out of social media. Things everywhere. But what got you on this kind of, I hate to say a kick, but it was kind of a focus that I haven't really seen a lot of other people do. There are some now who are picking it up, but you really focus a lot on products that work and don't work. What got you started on that?
So the original channel was more like safety tips, how to escape, duct tape, ropes, handcuffs, like stuff that would be involved in kidnappings. I did a quick scenario-based thing where a movie was playing and I mirrored the movie scene, which was breaking out of zip ties. And that kind of started all of this. Then as I got bigger, I saw all these cool products that are specifically designed for safety or for personal benefits, whatever. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. So I started with some escape tools for vehicles. So I'm like, that should be easy, right? You buy these things, you test them out, and if they work really well, then we can promote them, right, for my followers. And then I went there, and I brought like 6 different products, and 3 of them didn't work. But it wasn't just that it didn't work. It was that the material they used was falsely advertised. So they will say hardened steel, but it was aluminum. Aluminum, like the moment I hit that window, the aluminum tip just bended in. So it was just like that pointy, sharp thing that's supposed to break the window, gone. And then I'm like, well, maybe I'm doing it wrong. So I bought another one. Well, I mean, it could happen, right? That someone else does it right. And I'm just doing this wrong. I'm not reading the instructions. And then when I post that online, it just got worse. They're like, oh, you're not hitting it at the right angle. You need to hit in the middle of the window. And I'm like, for those who do know, if you're in the driver's seat, the best place to break a window is in the left corner. That's where it's most weak. It's proven. Everyone agreed on this. This is the way to do it. And the amount of people responding, okay, no, you don't hit there or you don't do it like that. I'm like, there's so much misconception over what do you actually do in these scenarios. So it was fun to test out this whole series with these products. And, you know, I've reached out to companies that it did work. I'm like, hey, here, you have a great video for this. And then a great video for you to use. And for the companies that don't work, we're trying to get them taken down. Because, you know, if it doesn't work and you're selling it as life-saving tools, that's very, it's dangerous. It's no longer just I'm trying to sell something. This is you're endangering other people's lives.
No, absolutely. And it's, I guess they're banking on nobody's going to test it, right?
Hi, I'm here.
Yeah, until you came along and ruined it. But
yeah, we just did like 7 videos on it, and there was some really cool stuff, like things I would have never thought. And then there were some really cool looking things, and I'm like, okay, this one's going to work. And then it was a complete like disaster. Like there was like a part that slammed me in the face while trying to do it. I'm like, this is not functional at all.
What can you name any of the products that you really did like?
I don't know the brand name, but it was the brace. There was a bracelet with a tungsten bead on it, and basically you take it off, you spread it, and then you hold it and it breaks the window, and that worked phenomenal. What I liked about it is you could keep it on yourself, so if you're in a car crash or whatever, it stays on you, and that was nice to know. There's another one called a Rescue Me tool. It's and that one is like a spring-loaded one, but it has the seatbelt cutter. So you can't have everything. You have either have this something that's on you all the time, or you know, like a seatbelt cutter in there. Nowadays, most of the seatbelts release once they're in a car crash. They're easier to pull. You don't see people cutting them off a lot. But those bracelets worked a lot better than I thought. It was really like. That's fun.
I have one of those myself. It's interesting about that Rescue Me thing too, because the Rescue Me, I think I posted a video of somebody who got into a road rage. He used the product on the other guy's window, and Rescue Me came immediately on my account, which I totally give him kudos. And they're just like, no, that's not the way you're supposed to use this thing.
Well, it's good marketing because it works.
Yeah. It definitely did. Yeah, they did free marketing for them. What other things, other products have you tested at all? Anything else out there?
We have a good one coming up. I got Taser Week coming up. So we bought a lot of different products because, as you might know, different tasers work on different volts. The connection points, they need to be, you know, high raise. So when you do stab someone with the taser gun, it needs to connect. Otherwise, it can't, you know, electrocute. So we're doing a whole week of testing with what we do recommend, products that do work, don't work, and then kind of giving my expertise like, hey, is it intimidating? How does it look? What is the sound like? And then we're going to recommend a few that we feel work for the average person.
That's great stuff. You're doing good service for a lot of people.
I'm not looking forward to getting stunned though, but
you know. Are you going to get stunned?
Yeah, we have to test it, right?
I bet you hired somebody for that one.
Not there yet.
How about pepper spray? What's your thoughts about pepper spray? You think it's good? Some people I've heard said, it doesn't work as good as people say. What do you think?
I'm kind of neutral about it because it does that. Pepper spray itself, very rarely will you find one that has zero effect on someone. Most of the times, the irritation with the cayenne pepper or whatever irritation agent they have in there will cause irritation. And how long it lasts really depends on the product. You can't really go wrong with there. I'm sure you can, but the general consensus is that it's okay. My problem is more with, you know, the user. If it's very windy, how far are they standing away? You need to be about 3 feet in order to deploy it. So some of your self-defense basics are already limited because you have to get so close to use it. But if you do use it, spray and then step away because it's an irritation agent. But if I can still grab someone or your attacker can still grab you, you're not going to win it. So I'm really neutral. Like if you understand how you can deploy pepper spray safely and you know you're not standing downrange where the wind is blowing your face, absolutely. Spray, run, because that's what it's designed for.
And make sure you aim it at them. again, folks, we're talking to Dutch in the USA. You can find him on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Looking at your Instagram brings up a lot of questions for me, or at least I want to get people to know if they haven't seen it, some of the things you cover. So one of the things, you seem to have a theme for a little bit in regards to self-defense tools that people sometimes don't think about. And we'll also talk about the blue nail polish. We'll get to that in a little bit. But before that, you have keys in your hands.
And you talk about key in hand for self-defense. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So it does seem to resonate with most people, because if you put your keys between your fingers, if you do not properly put them there and you hit with that, and let's say you hit a shin or a jawline, that's pure bone. So if you have the keys turned into your skin, you're going to hurt yourself a lot more than you do them. It basically, you're taking a half an inch metal and pushing it into your knuckles, because that's what you're doing. And it's not ideal. There's other ways. If you have to, like more of a stabbing maneuver with keys, or slashing, like scraping, but they're not ideal, right? The chance that you slash someone that is critically injured with your keys is a myth. I'm not sure where it came from, but it's not functional, especially knowing here in America, there's a lot of other self-defense tools that you can legally carry that work much better. So trying to find some of this, like, and even me, I was like, yeah, you put your keys in your hands and that's how you defend yourself. And I'm like, but do you though? Is it really that effective? So, and that's why I kind of try these things out. So I grabbed a couple of keys and I hit a wooden board and I'm like, this is very uncomfortable. I don't recommend doing this. So that's really where I build my channel on, just these urban myths or situation things. And I just try them out, see if it works. If it doesn't, I'll let you know what I think we should do. But like I said, you have a lot of other options that are a lot better suited for self-defense.
What's your take on using an open hand compared to a closed fist? I think I got where you're going with this one. But what's your take?
I do know where you're going. So I find it much easier to defend myself with open hands, because that's probably your stance going to be anyway, right? Your hands are like raised above your chest, and you can deflect. You know, you can deflect, and if you are lucky enough, you can even grab and then do all kinds of crazy stuff in self-defense. What I like about it is an entire force of your wrist all the way down to your elbow. Some of the most dangerous acts that you can do in self-defense is open hand throat. So an open hand to the throat with your thumb and your index finger around their neck is very, very effective. Not a lot of people can fight through not having air, and that's really what it does. So it really depends. Like, there's great people that can fight with their knuckles closed, but there's some very effective ones with your hand open. And that probably leads you to your next point with the nail polish.
No, actually, just before the nail polish, because that reminded me of Tony Blauer's system, the spear system. Are you familiar?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Then I don't want to bother asking about that, because I know he teaches, he's got a spear system. He's been teaching here in the U.S. for years, but he says exactly like you said, everybody starts off, but he makes this actually a defensive maneuver where you position yourself and then you would block and strike with the open hand.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that was really clever. I think
it's kind of what you're probably going to do anyway, right? There's another fighting style, and I can't think of the name, but basically they use your first reaction as the first step of defense. So in his case, you kind of squat down, like you position yourself, you put your hands above your head, and that's your first move. So someone does anything, you go into that defensive stand, and then from there you start fighting, which I thought was interesting, because it was a new style I was trying to participate in. But at the same time, I'm like, for people that don't do self-defense things day to day, that's exactly what they will probably do. They drop down, put their hands up because they don't want to get hurt. And then from there, you learn how to fight, which I thought was interesting. I saw benefits to it, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's going on with the blue paint nails? I think I got a big stink on Instagram for a while.
So it really came down to multiple things. So at first, like a few months ago, I did how to make a proper fist. So how do you make a proper fist to fight someone? So like rolling the fingers, putting your thumb right here to really have the best impact and not hurt yourself while making a fist. A lot of my followers are female and they said, well, I have acrylic nails. How do you do that? So I was kind of thinking about what we could do, how I could show it. And then there was another video of someone telling me if they would kidnap someone, they would simply give the man a full set of acrylic nails and he would not be able to open doors, pick locks, whatever. So then it became interesting. I'm like, I want to use her audio and I'm going to do all the things she describes that men can do with these nails on while having a full set of acrylic nails. So I went to my local nail shop. I got a lot of weird looks. I'm like, I want acrylic nails. I want them about this big. And I sat there for 2 hours and, you know, had them fully. I didn't know at that point, but I guess they did a dip instead of like just an acrylic, like sticky on there. So they had like layers of glue on there. And I actually still, it's been like 3.5 weeks. I still have a small piece of blue nail that I cannot get off right here. And then I did the video. I did about 4 or 5 videos on the subject I showed you that you can still pick, you know, handcuffs and how to throw a punch. Some of the people say you can still put your fingers down and then put your thumb. Now, they're technically correct, but you have an entire gap right here. So if you hit something, it hurts. Second of all, if you try to do this, my immediate reaction is to do it like this because it's very hard to have your fingers all the way down and crawl your thumb over your fingers like that. So what happens is people say this, but what you're most likely going to do is once you hit something, you're going to break this entire nail and maybe even your thumb because this fast reaction is what you do. So what I said is you can either do it in, you do it like that, you crawl in your top fingers and you kind of make them straight, or you keep an open hand and you strike with your palm. A strike palm on your chin, eyes, the front of your chin, your neck, that is all very effective to defend yourself. And it doesn't require you to break your nails because my wife thought it was funny. She pulled my nail and she bended it the other way and I thought I was dying. So hitting something and then breaking your nails is not very pleasant.
Yeah, it's something you probably never would have experienced without trying that. That's exactly. Interesting. Fascinating stuff. Folks, again, too, if you see his website, I'm looking at his Instagram account right now, and you can see him. One of the things I like about it, he's got Hollywood versus reality. And if you've been listening to my show, I don't want to criticize Hollywood, but there's a pet peeve of mine because they give a lot of misconceptions of what reality is. And people seem to think they can do certain things when you can't, or certain things work when they don't. And that's why I really like Dutch in the USA, because he puts it to the test. Anything that really surprised you in your Hollywood versus reality videos that you said, wow, I thought this could have worked, but really didn't?
There was a scene from a movie from Denzel Washington where a young lady is zip-tied to the steering wheel. And that just blew my mind. Now, obviously, it's a movie, right? So I'm not going to put too much effort into it. But in this scenario, she had trouble reaching the steering wheel. And I looked at the zip ties, I analyzed it, and I zip tied myself to the steering wheel. I had no problem getting to my keys and start the ignition. And then on top of that, the width of those zip ties, all you had to do is tighten them with the other hand, because you could still reach, and kind of just hold the steering wheel and move up. Like you're going to just move your arms all the way up. And it broke very, very easily. But in the movie, it's like a whole big scene, and you know Denzel is about to die, and she has to step in and drive over this this bad guy. And I'm like, this could have been like a 2 second scene, and we could have been done with it. So yeah, there's that, and then there's a lot of zip ties, duct tape, and that kind of stuff. It's all plastic, right? There's if you break it down, it's plastic, and they have melting points. So most of the time you see people in basements or somewhere on the floor, the concrete floor, all of that can generate heat as long as you move them from left to right over the floor. So it's actually very easy to escape those things, but they make it seem like it's impossible, that only, you know, James Bond can get out of it.
No, that's the thing about it. Yeah. And unfortunately, certain parts of the world have kidnapping issues. There's certain high risk environments that have a lot.
Well, you see it right now in Haiti. There's a uptick in,
that's right,
and not just people that come to visit, like the higher elite of the country is being targeted as well. That's everywhere. It's money. There's money in kidnappings, and not just there, for corporate America. There's a lot of ransom insurances. If someone gets a company list of these ransom insurances, they can literally pick and choose, and they pay out immediately to release, because that's what the insurance is for. So there's a whole, I would say, if you want good security in your company, you might want to take a look at your insurance company that does these policies, because if they get a list of names of people that are insured for that, it gets very dangerous.
Let me ask you this. This is going to be a tough question, I think. So I understand if you can't, but what are some of the biggest misconceptions you think in the situational awareness world that you say, man, this, you know, this can put a lot of people in danger, or really doesn't help, or anything that stands out to you? I know there's probably several out there, maybe one that you see over and over again, and you think, wow, this one always happens.
I think it's people do not understand that they have value. And I'm not talking about value in a relationship or your work, but value as a physical being, meaning your organs, your color of your skin. If you travel to certain countries, the color of your skin indicates to the people surrounding it that you might be better off than they think. You might not have any money at all and you're doing a gap year or whatever. But if they see you as being wealthy, they will take you. And having that awareness comes down to like knowing where you're going to travel and looking up certain rules. But I think a lot of people do not realize the value they have, because they think, well, I'm not rich. But they don't know that. The people that are targeting you do not know that you don't have any money. You come into another country and you have a certain character they're looking for. Maybe you even get picked up by a nice car because, I don't know, you're doing business in a hotel, and you might be mid-level manager. It doesn't matter to them. They think, oh, he's coming for a company, means insurance. You know, there's a lot of things, and people need to be much more aware of their own value, of their physical being.
That's a great point. I know we only got a few more minutes left. You know, Robin, we were just talking before the show. You were mentioning Halloween, and you made some great points. Tell us a little bit about Halloween, what people should be prepared for.
Yeah, I'm doing some videos. Obviously, Halloween is coming up. So one of the things that you should be looking for is understand that there's people that do not participate in Halloween because they can't. Think of sex offenders. So when you walk through your neighborhood, I'm not saying all of them are, but a good point is to not knock on doors that don't have their lights on. You know, people that participate in Halloween, at least where I'm from, they have their lights on, or they change the bulb into a color that kids can come by, or have decorations. Your local authorities will actually make an effort and do stops throughout Halloween and before and after with these registered sex offenders. Or you can look at your own registry. You can go online and type your address, and you can find the people that live in your communities that are registered sex offenders, and avoid those places, obviously. But yeah, not everyone that turns their light off for Halloween is a voluntary non-participant, I would say.
That's interesting. I know my background is criminal psychopathology, so people don't realize a lot of times pedophiles, they're not stupid. Sometimes people don't realize they're working in professions if they can to get in contact with children. And this is why we see some of these stories sometimes, Boy Scout leaders, things of that nature. And again, the majority of Boy Scout leaders are not. But pedophiles will look for those opportunities. Tutoring.
That's a lifestyle, right? They embed themselves in places where it's most easiest to get, you know, what they're after.
Exactly.
It's scary as a parent. It's hard to navigate waters like that, especially if they live in your own neighborhoods and stuff. You know, the people you met, the neighbors you have might not always be who you thought they were.
That's absolutely true, especially if you're working at a, you know, if you live near a park and you take your children to the park, scan that area.
Yep, absolutely. Some of the urban myths on that is also what I do with my kids. And I don't really know if it's a myth. It's definitely a good idea regardless. So after they do the trick or treating, to scan your kids' candy after they come back. When we've heard the horror stories of that they put razor blades in there and stuff. I don't know if that's true. I didn't really find much online, but regardless, it's a good tip. Empty it out, see if there's any open packages, especially it's not just about safety, but it's also with COVID nowadays, if people have open packages in there, stuff like that, it's definitely a good idea to just do a quick sweep of the candy they collected, make sure that everything is kosher.
It's funny you mentioned that because I just did a podcast on it.
Yeah.
Whether it's myth or not about the razor blades.
What did you find?
The razor blades was a myth until 2019 when somebody actually decided to try it. Luckily, they caught it before.
Did it became real because it was a myth and he acted on it?
What's more than likely is what you happen is somebody try, well, you know what, shoot, let's be the first, I guess, or whatever he was doing. The worst case scenario, there was 5 deaths for children. None of them were ever associated with the candy. There was one prankster, it was a dentist. I don't know what his deal was. It was like 30 years ago. He decided to put X-Lax into like Hershey Kisses. So I don't know what the heck that deal was. He was upset at something, I guess. That's about as bad as I've heard.
Weird because it's his business, right? Kids eat candy. They come back to him for business. Maybe they weren't eating enough candy in the neighborhood.
I guess. I don't know. That was probably the strangest one I've heard. But thankfully, nobody has taken it to the extreme.
Yeah, but regardless, I think the tip stays. You know, you deal with so many different doors, and then it's always a good idea to check what your kids are ingesting.
Absolutely. Great stuff. I know we only have a few more minutes left with you, Dutch in the USA on Instagram, Dutch in the USA on TikTok, and I think he's already reached over 1 million followers over on TikTok. He's over how much?
4.1.
4.1?
Yeah.
Holy cow, because you were at 1.0 in November of last year.
Yeah.
Wow, so you quadrupled. Holy cow, my apologies. So 4.1 million on TikTok and 164,000 on Instagram. So yeah, a few people know. Dutch, this area is so long. I mean, we could literally be here till the next 8 hours and still not cover everything on situational awareness.
Agreed.
What are you coming up with in the next couple of weeks? People can start looking for your channel and start focusing on it.
So right now we have, I'm doing like weeks of scheduled content. So we have the Taser Week coming up. I'm doing a week on kids and baby safety, like doors, sleeping arrangement, all kinds of stuff there. Let me think. There was one more. The holiday hazards are coming out, which is like everyone is doing like Christmas decorations. But I've seen some interesting configurations of electricity in the past, and not a lot of people own a fire extinguisher in a house anymore. So doing a few of those holiday hazards, I wouldn't say dumb, but I was pretty ignorant about the fire hazards until I like started like digging in and how I do my Christmas lights. Now I'm trying to do as best as I can and making sure everything is set and that I have no fire hazards, especially now I have young children. Just want to make sure I do it right. And I thought that the world would want to know as well.
I'm going to put 2 requests and then ask you a strange question at the end, but 2 requests. Maybe you can do one on Lyft. They just came out with their report about sexual assaults on Lyft. I think it was 4,000 in the last year. So Reichers, that could be an interesting one. How can you protect yourself? Since sometimes people tell them, watch out for the door locks and things of that nature. And then my other request would be maybe shopping. Cause I've seen a lot of people that come out and they'll have bags on both arms. The robber's gonna say this is a gold mine. Did you do that one already?
Yeah, I did shopping. I've done one on Uber, like Uber safety, what to check for.
Okay.
I have another one coming up, which is kind of like a man week, where I always address what you can do, but never address who is doing the harm, right? And it's not the man or the man in general, it's specific people that do these crimes, but with a channel as big as mine, I think it's time that I can, talk to all the men and see, you know, how can we make sure that the people that are feeling this way, feeling unsafe, what can we do? Is there something that we're doing right now that we're just not aware of what we're doing? And then as far as the shopping, I've done a few You might not know, but I'm expecting a third baby in December.
You're so busy boy.
I can now try to shop with three kids, and I'll tell you the safest way how I can make that happen. It was a request from a video I did with my two children, so we just had to add one on to do with three. And then, Lyft. There's actually quite a few reports, people getting into cars that they think are Lyfts because it fits the description. There was just a big case not too long ago about someone getting into the wrong car and did not make it out of that car. It's definitely there's some great tips to be provided there.
Absolutely. Like we said, right? This is never ending. You have plenty of material for a long time. Yep. Well, I guess my last question is, I have some friends who live in Florida as well. How's Christmas in Florida? Because I always ask, you know, you don't have the snow. It's not really cold. is it different than Holland? Or?
Yeah, it's definitely. So like you said, we don't have snow, but neither do we in Holland. That the snow hasn't been really there for years. Really? Maybe a little snowstorm here and there, but very minimal compared to New York City or one of the colder cities. But we love it here in Florida. It's about 60-65 in the winter, so you get a little bit of the cold breeze. I say cold, but 60 is cold for us. And then maybe you have a day where it drops to 45 and you get to wear that one sweater you own. And then, you know, Christmas is very big here, probably because all the people from New York moved here and brought that with them. so we do big Christmases. And what we like to do is take the kids through like an entire, there's one street where we live, where they go all out. The whole block is like, beautiful. So we like to do that, and we like to participate. I love Christmas lights.
Well, that's cool, because I know my friend taunts me a lot. He'll wear his Christmas Santa hat and then a t-shirt and shorts.
I'll send you a picture from the beach next weekend.
There you go. Don't forget this. Well, it's not Santa Claus yet, but again, folks, Dutch in the USA. You can find him on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Robin, thank you so much for taking the time out.
Thank you so much, sir.
That was awesome stuff. We wish you the best of luck. Make sure you follow him wherever he's at. He's really got some great stuff, folks. So make sure you check it out. Share, subscribe, hit that like button. You know we like it.